Drive Time on RTE Radio 1. Sponsored by Zurich. For pensions, protection, savings and investments. At Zurich, we deal in peace of mind.
As you've been hearing on the headlines here, members of the public will be able to visit Pope Francis's body in St. Peter's Basilica from tomorrow morning until 7 p.m. on Friday. That's according to a Vatican statement this afternoon. The Pope's funeral, which is expected to be attended by many world leaders as well, will take place in St. Peter's Square at the Vatican on Saturday morning. Now, we'll rejoin John Cook in Rome later in this programme, but at the moment we're joined by Colm O'Gorman, who's founder and former director of One in Four. Colm is also the former executive director of Amnesty International Ireland. And also on the line is Monsignor Enda Murphy, who's head of office at the Dicastery for Divine Worship and the Discipline of the Sacraments. You're both very welcome indeed to the programme. And I know, Monsignor Murphy, you knew the Pope personally, of course, so my condolences to you. In what capacity, may I ask, did you work with the Pope in the Vatican?
Well, Cormac, thanks very much for having me on, and good evening to you and all your listeners. Yes, I've been working in the Vatican for about 10 years now in that office for divine worship. So I'm sort of unofficial there and would occasionally meet the Pope in the course of work or outside of work sometimes. So just basically my time there has overlapped with his papacy. And it's just a question of knowing that he's there and his presence is there, and he sort of set the tone for the work that we all do in the various offices in the Roman Curia. And you know, that it was quite clear what style and tone that he wanted was one that was more opening, listening and welcoming to the people we were dealing with from all around the world, in helping him do his job and in helping other people coming to the Vatican looking for various assistance, etc., to help them as well.
Okay, and I want to discuss that with you and his legacy, of course, as well in a second. But may I ask how you heard the news of his passing yesterday?
Well, I just actually got a text message from a friend yesterday morning about 9 o'clock, I suppose. I'm actually at home at the moment on holidays, mm-hmm. and I just got a text. And I'm still, like, couldn't quite... It wasn't that I was surprised. I thought he had looked very unwell or not himself on Sunday when he appeared on the lodge on the balcony and then made the tour of St. Peter's Square. And so it took, you know, most of the day I was sort of still a bit taken aback, not entirely surprised, but shocked and very saddened, I have to say, because he has certainly been an inspiration there as someone who works there, mm-hmm. to know that he's in charge and was given direction, give the rest of us all great encouragement as well.
Yeah, stay with me, Monsignor, if you can, for a second. Colm O'Gorman, you're very welcome to the programme as well. I read your article, your piece in the journal, which was published yesterday evening, I think. Can I sum it up by saying, and you can put it into your own words, am I right in saying that you admired the Pope, but you had some reservations? Would that be fair?
Yeah, I think so, Cormac. First of all, I'd just like to extend my sincere and heartfelt condolences to Monsignor Dolan and indeed to everybody else who is grieving the loss of the Pope. I mean, he was a remarkable man. The depth of his compassion and his profound simplicity, I suppose is the only way I can say it, was just quite extraordinary. And I enormously admired and appreciated many of the things that he had to say, for instance, on refugee rights, on marginalized people. I mean, some of the statements he made on the LGBTQ people were hugely significant. His response to the genocide in Gaza has been, I think, just incredibly encouraging and inspiring. So there was a lot about Pope Francis that I admired and appreciated very deeply. But on the issue of clerical child sexual abuse, I think I have to say that it's important to, well, I think it's important to be objective and honest about all of this. And I think he failed in many of the same ways as his predecessors. He took some steps forward. He did some things that others hadn't done. But he failed for me in the most fundamental way, which is he failed to acknowledge the obvious proven truth. The fact that this cover-up of these crimes against children and vulnerable adults was not a failure on the part of bishops or priests or others. Rather, it was a cover-up that was mandated and directed and required by the Vatican. It was enshrined in canon law. It was enshrined in communications issued directly to bishops by previous popes and by the Vatican on a repeated basis. And Francis never acknowledged that. He talked about the failings of bishops and others, but he never acknowledged the fundamental responsibility of the Vatican or the fact that this was not some benign, negligent, ill-informed, fumbling failure. Rather, it was a deliberate, willful cover-up. And that's established. That's proven fact. Okay. And I think that's a great shame.
What about in 2019, when he removed the so-called secrecy rule, the 1962 secrecy rule? Was that an implicit or an explicit acceptance of what you're saying?
Well, I mean, first of all, that relates to a document called Crimen Solicitationis. And in 2006, I made a documentary for Panorama for the BBC talking about the impact of that document. The Vatican said that those of us who made the documentary should hang our heads in shame. And I had every senior canon lawyer in Ireland coming on saying that it had nothing to do with child sexual abuse. So it was a step forward when Francis acknowledged, I suppose, implicitly that it did by removing the pontifical secrecy from that document. But, you know, when I was a child, when I made my first confession, I learned that it was important to acknowledge how one had harmed other people, either through actions or a failure to act. To acknowledge that, to apologise for that, and then to seek forgiveness.
Yeah.
Now, I had no interest in Pope Francis, or indeed have I any interest in any other senior person in the church having to humble themselves. This is not about sackcloth and ashes. But the truth matters, and the truth is important. And I'm sorry to say that Francis failed to show a commitment to the truth in the way that I hoped he would. And I think it's important to be able to acknowledge his profound goodness, the important things that he did, but not ignore that fact, because it's too important. This
okay.
is too important a fact to disregard.
Can I go back to Monsignor Enda Murphy on that for a second, Colm? Is that, and I know this is a really difficult time for everyone in the Catholic Church, and especially those like yourself who knew the Pope personally, but is that difficult to hear when assessing Pope Francis's legacy, that the cover-up of abuse in the Church was not a failure just, it was mandated, required by the Vatican?
Well, first of all, I'd like to thank Colm for his sympathies, which I know are heartfelt, and I thank him for them. And I also remember very clearly, years ago now, watching Colm on a panel discussion programme, probably on RTE, and he said something similar to what he's just said now, that when he was young, the Catholic Church told him that he should own his shame, own his shame or own his guilt. I forget which, and Colm can correct me if I'm mistaken there. And I think that's very true. And again, it's not in a sense of sackcloth and ashes, but it's acknowledging wrong, owning up to it, and being prepared to make reparations for it as well. And I think...
Where does that leave us in terms of assessing Pope Francis's legacy then? Well, that there was an active cover-up of abuse in the Vatican.
Well, I think that the Pope would be open to hearing all that. The late Pope would be open to hearing all that. Like, he wasn't someone who would shy away from listening to hard questions. He often thanked people for the courage to ask hard questions. And I think one of the things he did say...
Would he be an agent of decision-making in that, I wonder?
I don't... Well, ultimately, the Pope is the Pope and has the full authority in the Church. But I think one of the things that he did set about doing, which he did set about doing in, and this was clear from his first document, The Joy of the Gospel, where he talked about setting in place processes, because I think he knew that he wouldn't be able to change everything overnight or even over several years. But what he found was important was to set in place processes that could bring the Church institutionally and corporally as the body of Christ, to acknowledge and to come to a place where those things could be acknowledged freely. And that sense of owning that could take place, and the church would be better for that.
And isn't that, I think, if may I ask Colm about that, isn't that key in terms of any assessment of the legacy as well, that he probably knew that one man alone, even the Pope, cannot change the institution of the Catholic Church, but processes can. And that annual demand or annual audit of what is being done in the Church about abuse that he wanted to know since 2022, I think, that'll stand to him, will it not?
Do you know, Cormac, the first reference I've ever seen to sexual offences by clergy in the Catholic Church, the first rules were introduced in the early 4th century. Church history is littered with scandals like this emerging, and rules or new laws being introduced. This wasn't a modern phenomenon. This wasn't something that emerged for the first time in the 1990s. It's long-standing and it's well-known. And the Catholic Church has an extraordinary depth of knowledge and understanding of the dynamic, including the psychosexual dimensions of paedophilia. It didn't act on those to protect children. Rather, it acted on foot of complaints or allegations or knowledge of abuses to protect itself, its power, its authority, and its money, its resources. Telling the truth matters. And it shouldn't be a radical thing to ask a pope to tell the truth, to acknowledge the proven truth at this stage, that this was a concerted, willful, deliberate cover-up mandated by the Vatican, enshrined in canon law, enforced by the Vatican at the most senior level, and communicated directly on numerous occasions to bishops around the world. Maybe institutional change can't happen very quickly, but one of the things that can drive that change is the telling of truth. And truth should never be radical, not something as simple as this well established. And creating those, those systems for change is an important component of all of that. But telling the truth is a critically important response, not least to those who have been so dreadfully harmed by the actions of the church.
In one sense, I would not have asked this question in this way until I heard Bernadette Fahy on this station at 1 o'clock, Colm. And I just wonder what level of knowledge Pope Francis had. And I refer to my preface there. She said, and she was a resident of Golden Bridge Orphanage, she said to the News at 1, "I really wanted to meet the Pope and discuss the whole matter with him," and she did in 2018 during his visit. "And I did," she says, "and he didn't know anything about industrial abuse. He didn't know what an industrial or a reformatory school was. He didn't know what a Magdalene laundry was. And he didn't know what a mother and baby home was in Ireland. All of that was news to him," she said, "and that was really quite shocking." I was taken aback, Colm, by that.
This is a very difficult thing to say in the context of the fact, in the context of him just having died 24 hours ago. But that's simply not true. That's a deceit. Pope Francis attended a private screening of the film Philomena with Philomena Lee and Steve Coogan. He knew about mother and baby homes before he came to Ireland. I've heard it reported from that meeting that he said he was shocked and knew nothing about it. Similarly about Magdalene laundries. You know, when you look at that objectively, there are only three options. One is that an extraordinary level of incompetence on the part of the Vatican and the Curia and the diplomatic branches of the Vatican City State at the most profound level, right? How could they not have shared this information with him when he was coming to Ireland? A level of disinterest where it just didn't matter enough for them to get across it, or frankly, dishonesty, where they did know about it, but what we repeatedly get is an abdication of the truth, an abdication of responsibility, a deflection, a diversion, a refusal to engage with the facts as they're well established. And I'm very, very sorry to have to say, within 24 hours of, just over 24 hours of him passing, that I think it was simple dishonesty. It's not true that he didn't know about mother and baby homes. He did.
Can I ask you for your reaction to that, Monsignor?
Well, I can't speak to that. I don't know what the Pope knew. I would say that we know that the Pope would have been the first to admit, as he said many times to himself when he was asked, "Who is Jorge Bergoglio?" And his first response was always, "He's a sinner." And, you know, he wasn't perfect, and he would clearly admit that. And, you know, I agree with Colm that the truth is necessary and will make us free, and it's not radical. And I think that in this case here, the hope comes now in terms of the processes he has started. And I think particularly of this great process of listening that he began with the Synod. And, you know, their abuse is talked about in the final document, which he adopted as his own part of his own teaching, where he talks about abuse and the rights of victims and the need for the church to acknowledge its shortcomings and to acknowledge at all levels what went wrong. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I can hear very clearly what Colm is saying and acknowledge it. And there's no place for me to begin to litigate about that. But I know that the Pope, you know, imperfect as he was, he was imperfect, but he was present. And I think what he did do is he kept showing up and kept his ear open and kept seeing how we can move this forward. Okay. And for all of that, I think we are in a better place now than we were 12 years ago or 20 years ago or many years before that.
When he was first elected mm-hmm. Pope. Look, I know these are not easy conversations, so I really appreciate you joining us, Monsignor Enda Murphy, at this very difficult time for you, I know, and many Catholics, head of the Office of Dicastery for Divine Worship and Discipline of the Sacraments. Sacraments. Thank you. Colm O'Gorman, founder and former director of One and Four and the former executive director of Amnesty International Ireland, thank you as well. We will rejoin John Cook in Rome later in the programme, but for the moment, we'll take a very quick break.